How do you respond when corrected?
You can't be devastated by the correction. It's one of the primary defense mechanisms that people use against being corrected, is that if you tell them, like if you come and say, I think your sermons are way too long, and I just go, I worked so hard on that sermon. I think God told me, but maybe not. Maybe I just stink as a pastor. Maybe I should just hang it up. And if I say that, people are going to go, boy, I'm sure not going to correct you anymore.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hand. And the instrument I play. Wake up my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
When we're off course and going in the wrong direction in life, it's so helpful to have a person come alongside of us in love and tell us there's a better way. But if you're like most, correction doesn't always sit very well with you, and you might even reject it. Today on The Balanced Word, we'll consider the godly response to correction and also learn how to give it to others. When done correctly, it can really be beneficial. Here to continue our series, Smarter Living, from the Proverbs, Pastor Dave Rolfe once again.
This morning, our topic is the topic of correction. Correction, it already, to hear the word sometimes is like, oh, this is bad. Most of us really don't like to be corrected that much. But correction is just simply saying to someone, you know, there's actually a better way to do what you're doing. You're actually sort of doing this wrong. And it's important for us to be able to have that kind of correction. Years ago, Pastor Chuck, we got him using a computer, and he had, you know, a Windows computer, and he had a Bible program that he used, and he'd use his word processor a little, and a map program, but he really didn't know much about computers, but he thought he did. He felt like he was on top of it. Well, one day he said, Dave, my mouse is broken. And I go, it was an old wired mouse. And I said, well, let me go look at it. And John Jackson and I went in his office. And I go, what's it doing? And he said, when I move it left, the arrow goes right. When I move it up, the arrow goes down. And I took his mouse and I turned it around. I said, try that. He goes, oh, yeah, that's much better. But quite often, correction is just simply that. It's a minor adjustment. It's just like you feel like things are falling apart, and really it's just a tweak of the mouse. It's just a turning of something that'll make a difference. And it's so important for us as humans to learn how to be corrected. It's important for us to give correction as well. Most of us get a level of anxiety when we think about correction. Some of our earliest memories in school were of us turning in something that we thought was a masterpiece and seeing the teacher correct it. They would just make the page bleed, red ink everywhere. For a teacher to correct something is one thing, but to correct it in red where it just says, this is awful, this is terrible, I don't know, teachers probably don't do that anymore because they don't want to brand anyone as being wrong, but you know, we would get that back, and then it got to where she would exchange papers with a friend and correct each other. Then you got to be the teacher, and you're writing, you know, wrong, big exclamation points, you idiot, and, you know, that was kind of fun. Then sometimes they would just let you correct your own paper, which you just get an eraser and erase the wrong answer. You learn how to turn a T into an F very easily, and that's the way you fix it. But we have this sense of, oh, correction. I remember back before computers, we used some stuff called correction fluid. The brand name of most of it was liquid paper. And you'd have a paper, and there was a mistake that you made on it. There was no fix it in the computer and print it out. You got this yucky white ink and smear it on there, and you sort of, blow on it, make it dry, and then you were able to type over it. But it corrected your paper, but it left it with a big stain on it. And kind of when you hold it up to the light, it looked awful. And then the smell of the liquid paper would make you high. And you're like, oh, there, that fixed it. You know, that's fine. You get a little older, and correction comes more in the standpoint of seeing lights in your rearview mirror and a policeman making it clear to you that, no, the way you made that left turn really wasn't the best way to do it. Or the speed that you chose to drive was actually not the correct speed that's clearly posted and that you should do. And that if you mess up enough, they send you to a place called a correctional institution. Isn't that a funny euphemism for a prison? There is nothing about prison that is correctional. But, you know, when we hear the word, we just go, oh, no, I don't want to hear about correction. You're trying to correct me about something. I'm not ready for that. I don't want that. But let's see what Solomon says about correction, because he has a lot of stuff here that's really helpful. Turn to Proverbs chapter 3, first of all, and we'll look in Proverbs 3, verses 11 and 12. Solomon says, verse 11, chapter 3, Proverbs, "My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor detest his correction. For whom the Lord loves, he corrects, just as a father, the son in whom he delights." He makes it clear that correction is in the context of and is about love. He uses the imagery, the metaphor really, of a human father as an example. God isn't literally our father, but God is in a relationship to us that can be best described in the way that a really good dad is with their kids. And so he uses the picture here and says, the way that a father loves his children and corrects them, that's the way your heavenly father lovingly corrects you. This is really important for us to grasp and understand, that any correction that is outside the realm of love is being done wrong. You need to be corrected about how you are correcting. And at the same time, if you love someone, you will want to see them corrected. God's correction is always coming from love. He isn't gaining pleasure by showing you how wrong you are just so you'll feel bad. He loves us. And so he goes, you can do this better. There's a way that you can do this that'll be so much more fruitful and beneficial for your lives. So he takes this metaphor of a human father. Now, obviously, a human parent who is correcting their children has a lot to learn about this too. Is it coming from love, therefore reflecting the way correction is supposed to be done? The object is always improvement, not judging, not inflicting guilt on someone. It's like, I want you to do better because I love you. And a lack of correction ultimately means a lack of love. If you really love somebody, you're not going to let them do things that are destructive and hurtful. And you just go, well, I'm not going to say anything. Now, we're going to see later in the study that there are some situations where you're better off not correcting. But I want you to understand the overall concept here is, since correction is about love, if you never correct anyone, you really want to question, am I really being loving? To be totally permissive as a parent and never point out the errors of your child is not to be a loving parent. It's to be a permissive parent. It's to be a parent who, like, I don't care how my kid turns out. This is all about me. And so, you know, here he would want us to understand, if you don't correct, you don't love. When we're correcting anyone, we need to ask ourselves, why am I doing this? What is my motive? Because it's easy to get other motives clogged in the middle of our correction. Because, for instance, as a parent, you correct your children because you want them to have a better life. You want them to grow and to learn and to be happy. But sometimes we correct our kids because they're embarrassing us. Because, you know, they're making us look like a bad parent. And it's important for us to know the difference between the two, because correction that's motivated by anything other than love is not the kind of correction that God wants us to exude. But not only that, it's easy for us to convince ourselves, I'm doing this out of love. How many parents angry with their kids? I'm doing this out of heart of love. You know, but what we have to ask ourselves is, not only what is my motive in my correction, but what is perceived as my motive? How am I coming across? Because if you correct someone in love, but they don't see that it's actually coming from love, it's not enough to just say, I'm telling you this for your own good. I'm telling you this because I love you. And to have the object of our correction just go, really? It doesn't sound like it. It doesn't feel this way at all. This doesn't feel like loving communication. And so when we do communicate correction, we need to ask ourselves, am I like God, like a good father, a loving father? Am I communicating this correction out of love? And then secondly, can they tell that? Now, sometimes no matter how much you try to be loving, sometimes in the moment the person being corrected has such an issue with correction that they can't see your love. But our goal should always be that people see, they understand that we care about them. Whether it's correcting a friend or pointing something out to a stranger or your kids or your parents or whatever, love is at the center of all of it. And if you, like Paul said in 1 Corinthians 13, you can do all kinds of great things. You can give your body to be burned for somebody. You can have magnificent wisdom and knowledge and gifts and all that. But, you know, if you don't have love, it doesn't amount to squat. It doesn't mean anything at all. And so for us to consider correction, we need to understand that it's designed to function in the area of love, and our primary desire should be to communicate correction in a way that actually feels like love, that somebody goes, wow, I see that you're looking out for my good. Now, whenever correction is given, not only should it be communicated in love, but how you respond to correction, in a sense, defines you. It tells you something about yourself, and it tells the person who's correcting you something about who you are. There are several verses that look at this. Turn first of all to Proverbs 13 and verse 18. He says, poverty and shame will come to him who disdains or can't stand correction, but he who regards a rebuke will be honored. Receiving correction leads to honor. Rejecting correction leads to poverty and shame. Turn over a couple pages to chapter 15 and verse 10. And he says, harsh discipline is for him who forsakes the way, and he who hates correction will die. If you hate to be corrected, ultimately it can kill you. That's how serious it is. Same chapter down in verse 32. He who disdains instruction despises his own soul, but he who heeds rebuke gets understanding. Again, it's the idea of how you respond to correction shows whether you hate your soul or whether you're loving life and you love to do things well in a good way. Now, the last one is over in Proverbs 29 and verse 1, where he says, he who is often rebuked and hardens his neck will suddenly be destroyed, and that without remedy. So, I can look at how I respond to correction and actually predict my future. In a way, if I continue to respond in this way, my life is going to get messed up. I'm showing that I'm being stupid. I'm showing that really I don't love doing life because I'm not receiving that which is offered to potentially help me, to potentially make a difference in my life, help me do life better. So what does it mean if whether you receive instruction or resist instruction defines who you are and what your future is to a degree? What does it mean to receive instruction? First of all, to receive instruction doesn't mean that you agree with what the person is saying. There are a lot of people out there trying to correct you, and a lot of them are wrong. Some people are just obsessively correcting everyone that they see. They just think out of arrogance, they think they know best. I don't have to, if someone comes up and says, you know, I think you're doing this wrong, and or they go, you know, they come and say, the problem with your sermons, they're too long. I don't have to say, yeah, okay, then I'll make them shorter. Because then somebody's going to go, your sermons are too short. Okay, now I'll make it longer. That's not what it means to receive correction. It doesn't mean they're right. But what it means is I am going to give due consideration to the offer of correction that I hear. I'm not going to just discount it out of hand, but I'm going to go, I'll think about that. I'll pray about it. And I certainly want to make people feel like I'm glad that they offered the input. Look, they might be wrong. They probably are wrong because people are wrong a lot. But if I am going to be someone who's receptive to correction, I want to be a person who, when somebody offers input, that I go, huh, you know, you might be right. I'm gonna think about that. I'm gonna consider that. It's a possibility. It's such a radical thing to be able to say, you might be right. But if we don't learn to say you might be right mentally, then we're rejecting input, we're rejecting criticism, we're rejecting correction. But also, if you're corrected and you receive the correction, you can't be devastated by the correction. It's one of the primary defense mechanisms that people use against being corrected is that if you tell them, you know, like if you come and say, I think your sermons are way too long, and I just go, I worked so hard on that sermon. I think God told me, but maybe not. Maybe I just stink as a pastor. Maybe I should just hang it up. You know, I always know when somebody starts getting senile, they're the last one to know, maybe that's it. Maybe I'm losing it. And if I say that, people are going to go, boy, I'm sure not going to correct you anymore. If somebody says to you, you know, that outfit, I like the outfit you wore last week better than that. Oh, I feel so bad. I'm so humiliated. I feel like I can't even set foot in public anymore. See, that kind of response is actually a rejection of correction because it backs people off and it makes sure that they're never going to correct you again. And so to be receptive is to not necessarily to agree, but to give some credence to what somebody is saying and then to not do something that's going to totally turn them away. Now, you might think, well, I need to listen to criticism based on the validity and the credibility of the person who is correcting me. And actually, I don't think that's necessarily the case. The whole idea of consider the source. Because sometimes some of the things that I have needed to hear, I heard from somebody first who didn't even like me, who was mad at me. See, here's how it works. If I hate you, then my antenna are tuned to find something wrong that you've done. I'm looking for your weakness so that I can feel justified in the way I feel about you based on what I discover about you. If you hate someone, you're looking for their Achilles heel. Now, that is not the right thing. It's not right, but it's just the way it is. Therefore, a lot of times, if there is something that I need to correct in my life, the people who love me are the last ones that are going to share that with me because they're afraid it's going to affect our relationship. But somebody who hates me, they'll blur it out. They'll tweet it. They will, you know, just say it and tell everybody about it so it gets back to me. I still, even in those cases, I need to consider, I wonder if this is right. Anytime somebody says bad things about me online, I want to consider it. Some of the places that I will regularly look and on the internet are places of people who can't stand Calvary Chapel, because I'm a Calvary Chapel pastor, and I want to hear not only what happened to some of these people that turned them against Calvary, I want to go, man, I can learn. I can learn something that applies to me if I listen to someone who really doesn't like me. I don't go on those kind of sites in order to try to make friends. I go onto those sites for valuable information. So it doesn't matter how kooky someone is. You might have something to learn from them. You may have something that can actually be helpful to you. Because if they are saying you are this, this, and this, and you go, man, I can make a couple little changes, and then they're not going to think I'm that any longer. See, a receptive heart wants to hear criticism, no matter who it's coming from. And no matter what the intention is, it's like, I'm ready to listen because I want to grow. I want to improve. I want to do life better. So I need people who will correct me. And my friends a lot of times don't want to correct me because they don't want to hurt me. So therefore, it's up to my enemies. Have at it. I can really benefit from that.
We're learning how to give and receive correction today on The Balanced Word, and Pastor Dave Rolfe will share more in a moment. All of this is part of our series in the Proverbs called Smarter Living. And you can request a CD copy by calling 949-362-7475. I should also mention this entire series is available on a USB for a donation of $10 or more. You'll receive all 51 messages in the series that'll lead you to smarter living as you hear and learn to live by God's wisdom from the Proverbs. So call us at 949-362-7475 and ask for the Smarter Living Thumb Drive. Our programs are also available online at thebalancedword.com. Thank you for your support of the Balanced Word Radio Ministry. It allows us to bring Pastor Dave's teachings to stations like this one all across the nation. Donations can be made at thebalancedword.com. Dave Rolfe is the pastor of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. You can hear him teach on a Sunday morning at any one of these three times, 8, 9:45, and 11:30. Visit ccpacifichills.org for more information or to live stream. Check out Pastor Dave's one-minute messages, a great way to start the day. You can listen to them at thebalancedword.com or watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. Let's pursue the answer to this question as we wrap things up today.
What does it mean to resist correction? If receiving correction means to give it credibility, to listen to what they have to say, to not be just devastated by it, rejecting correction, as Solomon talks about here, as being like hating life and you know, you're killing yourself. Rejecting correction looks like I put up a defense. I hear what you say, but here are my arguments why you're wrong. So you correcting me opens the door to us having an argument. There, and a lot of times this just is excuses. If someone says, you know, this morning you said some things that really offended me. And I mean, there's a good chance that that happens. I can go, wow, I'm sorry that it felt that way. That wasn't what I was trying to do. And I'll think about it. And unless it was super funny, I'll just not repeat it third service. But at the same time, as I'm offering that, I could easily say, well, you should try this. It's a lot harder to do what I do than you probably think. And I'm kind of jet lagged. And I've gone through a lot over the last couple weeks that has devastated me. And so there's my excuse. It's really interesting to watch, if you like sports at all, watch how losing teams respond. Quite often, there's this defensiveness and there are excuses that are being made. I'm not a huge Cleveland Cavaliers fan, but they have a basketball player who's arguably the best or the second best player in basketball. But there's something about him losing that at the end, he's crying about the officials. He's kind of blaming his team. He's making every excuse in the world where, oh, the officials weren't calling any fouls on them. Golden State's a bunch of little wimpy guys. There's not a lot of damage they can even do. And there were more fouls called on them than there were on the Cavaliers. But when someone responds to a critique by defending themselves, it's just like saying, you know what? I reject anything you have to say.
We'll come back to this subject next time on The Balanced Word as Pastor Dave Rolfe continues to point the way to smarter living. The Balanced Word is brought to you by Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands. And the instrument I play with.